1913 is the year America ceased to be a republic. In this video, I'm going to cover the three things that happened that year that took away America's sovereignty and how they are so much of the problems we're dealing with now and what you can actually do about it. Check out the video. Hey out there, Jeremy here. This is your Create Your Own Life show. If you are new to this podcast and to the channel, and you are viewing this on YouTube, make sure you hit the subscribe button below. Also hit the notification bell so you don't miss any new episodes. And be sure to share us with your family and friends because it is what helps us to make a bigger impact. And the episode we're going to do today, something I've done quite a bit of research on, I've been talking about for a bunch of years. And I opened a discussion on Twitter 2 days ago, I think. And it was super, super, super popular. So I decided I wanted to do an episode about this because I've been very adamant about today's topic, and I wanted to cover a few different things. So 1913 is squarely in the middle of what's called the progressive era in American politics. And a lot of good things happened in the progressive era, and a lot of really bad things happened in the progressive era. We had the kind of split in the Republican Party that happened during that era with Teddy Roosevelt and the Bull Moose Party. We had a lot of interesting things happening during that time period. And in 1913, actually, in March of that year, was when President Woodrow Wilson, who I think is one of the single most dangerous people to the American Republic, took office. And there were three big things that happened that year that, in my opinion, obviously there's other things that have happened since. There's other things and issues that have happened with the country. But I think if you look at the three core issues that we're dealing with as a country right now, I think the three of them happened in 1913. Number one is the Income Tax Act of 1913. We also have the 17th Amendment, which changed the process for how we vote for the Senate. And I'm going to get into each of these a little bit more and explain them how we got here. And also the Federal Reserve Act, which passed 2 days before Christmas. So anyway, so I think if you look at these particular things, they're what takes a lot of our sovereignty, right? Like before 1913, I've seen these memes online that say before 1913, people kept 100% of their income. That's not 100% true, because there was an income tax that was levied after the Civil War. I think it was dropped sometime in the 1870s. There was also another income tax, I'm going to get into this, that was levied in 1894, which we're going to talk about. And then the Income Tax Act actually happens in 1913, and it wasn't reinstituted till later that year, is when we actually see the taxation starts in the country. It wasn't ratified until October, the Revenue Act of 1913. All right, so anyway, let's go back to kind of how we got here. So I want to take a look at income tax as the place I want to start, but I want to explain why I think these are the three main issues. Because number one, people kept a lot more of their money. Like as I mentioned, there were small taxes that happened here, there, but I'm not going to say you kept 100% of your money because it is untrue, but you kept just about all the money you made, which means, you know, you would work for something, you'd pay for it. You wouldn't work half of the year to pay the government for something like a lot of people do now. Some people work more than that. We also penalize producers, which I think is a really bad idea, right? Like, oh, tax the rich, penalize the rich. Well, sure. Are some people doing stupid things with their money? Absolutely. But at the same time, business owners and people starting businesses are what give jobs to other people. I think people have this weird idea that jobs are created by the government. That's just not the case. Sure, they can be altered by tax policy and all these different things, but the government, though they employ a lot of people, are not responsible for the main parts of the economy. It is business owners and it is producers. And I think, frankly, I think it's wrong to tax people for being producers. That's my viewpoint on it. There's nuance within that. We can have a future discussion on that. But anyway, so I think handling income tax would also handle a lot of poverty, handle a lot of issues people are dealing with. It would handle It would handle a lot, because if you look at it, the super rich have figured out strategies to not pay their taxes anyway. This ends up just squarely hurting the middle class. So that's income tax. The 17th Amendment. 17th Amendment, what happened there is basically previously before 1913, two houses of Congress, if you don't know that, bicameral legislature is what it's called. And it's similar to the upper house and lower house in the House of Commons and the House of Lords in the UK. Like, it's a similar idea. And when we look at that, Congress has the larger representation. It's based on population in each state, and you get a certain number of people representing you. The Senate was different, where every state got two people representing them. Now, the difference is the Senate was selected by state legislatures. So you may have a state that's a very, in some ways, like, let's say New York State, right? New York State as a whole is actually a pretty conservative state, but there's pockets, right? Like, Albany is very Democratic. New York City is very Democratic and actually outweighs most of the state because the population is so high. So what would happen is the state legislature, so the people that govern the state, may actually be more conservative because they're selected in more conservative areas, right, of the state. And those people then select their representatives, and they would represent the state legislature. So you'd have this balance of the state has a say at the state level, and then you also have the people have a say. Like, it's really, really important. So the 17th Amendment got rid of that. And I'll get into what that means in a couple more minutes, but I don't want to, like, kind of dive into the whole thing here. And then the third thing is the Federal Reserve Act. And that's where Congress, which is supposed to have the ability to levy money, lost that ability. And it happened over the Christmas holiday, which is pretty wild. So let's take a look at the first thing, which is income tax and how we got here. I did some extensive research on this because I know those of you out there researching will tell me if I'm wrong. And I do appreciate that, but I want to try to do the best I can to give you real and factual information. So the Income Tax Act passed on February 3rd of 1913. I have my notepad next to me here, so that's where I'm getting all this information from. And as I mentioned, there was a short-lived income tax during the Civil War, and that was really levied in order to pay for the Civil War and a lot of the damage that had been done. It was later dropped. There's an act that passes called the Wilson-Gorman Tariff Act of 1894. And the Democratic Party gets elected, I think it was an election of like 1890 or something like that. And the big thing they ran on is, we're going to reduce import tariffs. And people are like, oh, okay, cool. So I guess during that point in time, people cared about income tariffs, right? So that was what they ran on. Once they got into office, they realized, well, if we get rid of these income tariffs, because tariffs produce a lot of money, right? Because you're making things that are made in other countries cost more money. Which is a good thing, right? Because it supports American jobs, helps Americans here, blah, blah, blah. It's a similar issue to what we're dealing with now, to everything being made in China and a lot of other countries. Like, if we impose high tariffs, then things will have to be made here again, which changes the standard of living. Anyway, so this act passes in 1894 because basically it said, okay, if we're going to reduce tariffs, we have to create an income tax, because if we don't have an income tax, we're going to have a shortfall of money. Which was pretty wild that they took a look at that. So in doing that, here, I just want to make sure I get this other number here, because I found this so interesting. Just give me a second here. Looking at a lot of these numbers were just extremely interesting to me. I just wanted this money number. I wrote down the number I wanted, but I missed a number here. Okay, cool. So the Wilson-Gorman Tariff Act, it levied a 2% tax on all income over $4,000, which I guess in hindsight, if I'm for any sort of a tax, I'm for a flat tax. So it's not a bad thing, right? But the way the Constitution is worded, it created a problem. And the thing I wanted to tell you here, so $4,000, this article was written in 2010. So $4,000 in 1894, fast forward to 2010, you would need $88,100 for the same buying power of that 2010 money. So me being interested, I'm like, well, it's 2023. What would that buying power be now? So I looked it up, and it was $121,000 in 2023 money. It was equal to $4,000 in 1894. That just goes to show you the third thing here, the Federal Reserve, how they've effed us. They've absolutely screwed us. Your dollar has so much less buying power. That's why a big reason I'm not for this, you know, higher minimum wage, because your $15 still has the buying power that like six or seven did when when I was in school, and our minimum wage was like $7.13 or something like that.
If you appreciate the work that we do here and you want to support this show, the biggest way you can do that is by supporting the products that we know, use, and love, and that I recommend for you here on the show. The first that I want to talk about is MyPillow, literally one of my favorite products. The MyPillow Classic is what I use every single night. It's handled a lot of my neck pain, a lot of my back pain. As you guys know, I've been a competitive powerlifter since my early 20s. I've retired from that, but I still take pretty good care of myself, and I'm still pulling some heavy weights, as I pulled 500 last week on deadlift. And our favorite product from when we travel is actually the MyPillow Travel Pillow, and it's one of the things that we actually give to absolutely everybody. It is a great product to fall asleep on. So if you want to go to MyPillow.com/CYOL, there's some really great holiday deals over there. You can get up to 66% off of select products. Also, one of the biggest changes in my life over the years has been handling a lot of parasites in my body. A number of years ago, I did a cleanse with Dr. Jason Dean, and we removed these things called liver fluke from my body. They were actually eating my liver. It was kind of crazy. And every few months, I do either a parasite cleanse or his full moon detox that he's doing right now. So if you want to head over to bravetv.store/CYOL and grab some of his amazing products over there. I know he has a great holiday special going on right now as well. Support our sponsors. They help the show to continue, and they help us to do what we're doing. And we could not do it without you. And you could do it just by using the power of the purse and supporting the products that we love. Thanks.
Anyway, so this act passes, but then in 1895, there is a case called Pollock versus Farmers Loan and Trust. And what they took a look at is basically this, based on how the law was written, if they were going to pass this act and for this act to be constitutional, the money would have to be apportioned to the states, meaning like this money that's coming in, each state would have to get some. But what happened is they made it unapportioned money, meaning the federal government got all the money and they could use it. So there was a 5-4 vote that the Supreme Court said, no, this is not constitutional. So then what was happening is the government was looking at it like, well, shoot, we need to make more money. We need to figure out like how to like kind of run this thing that's starting to cost too much money. And you'll find in the 1930s, it's just costing way too much money. But anyway, they passed the 16th Amendment. The 16th Amendment is the Income Tax Amendment. And here's the thing I found really interesting about that. So on February 3rd of 1913, they got the required 36 states, because that's all you need to in order to ratify a constitutional amendment. So the 16th Amendment passes, which is income tax. And I found this really interesting, being from New Jersey, that New Jersey is one of the states that didn't ratify the 16th Amendment. So does that mean I don't have to like pay income tax? No, it does, because it's a constitutional amendment and you'll need 36 states. It's the way our constitution works. But anyway, so that is how we get to income tax. We go from something that they say isn't constitutional to we go down the slippery slope and boom, government gets a whole bunch of your money. All right, so that's the first thing. The 17th Amendment, this is a really big progressive era thing. And I think this is really important during like the past election. It would have been important. It's important for just general governing, right? Because right now, after the 17th Amendment, the Senate doesn't really serve a purpose, right? Like, so, and it's something that really damages the Republic, because now we can see large cities can kind of really skew things, whereas it was much more equal when population centers would have a say, right? Like if you have a large population, you're going to have more congresspeople. And if you have a smaller population, you're going to have less congresspeople. So that's why we have the House of Representatives, right? It's based on population, where those bigger cities and those bigger states can get their representation, right? Because then what you would happen is smaller states and states with lower population, which have just as much of an investment in the country, don't have a say. So by taking this away, you would have, as my example earlier, there's some states that are basically have a large city and the state is red because of it otherwise, right? Like, I have a large city that's blue and the state is red otherwise. And those large cities can then basically say, okay, well, we're going to vote for the senators, and our senators are now all Democratic because we're a large population area, and that's how it works. Whereas if you look at the state legislature, legislatures are picked from each little area of the state, like within the state, kind of the state Senate, like each state has a state Senate. And in that state Senate, they elect people from each area to represent the state. So you may have a state that is highly conservative, but has Democratic senators because of this. And in actuality, it makes it so that the Senate doesn't really serve a purpose, right? It doesn't really have a purpose anymore, because it's like, well, it's two House of Representatives. Why do we need two of them? And at the same time, let's go back to the election challenges that happened in the past. I'm not advocating for challenging elections, but if you remember in the election challenge, if they wanted to bring up something, it had to be brought up by a congressperson and it had to be signed by a senator, because the senators are seen as more powerful, because that's kind of the, if you're looking at the UK model, it's the upper house, right? And so it just really changes the model of a lot of things, and it makes the Senate really not matter, because it's like having one giant House of Representatives. So taking that away really changes how the American government fashions, and it makes us less of a republic and more of a direct democracy. So to me, that is the exact date when America changed from republic to a democracy. The third thing, the Federal Reserve Act. If you have not read The Creature from Jekyll Island by G. Edgar Griffin, I would love to get Mr. Griffin on the show. He's a very intelligent man. It talks about how the Federal Reserve happened. And the interesting thing about the Federal Reserve Act is they then got the ability to take away Congress's ability to mint money. And we were then giving away our ability to mint money to a body that now controls us, which is really interesting. And those of you that don't understand the Federal Reserve, it is not a national bank. What it is really is it's not federal, because it doesn't actually have, it's not a federal body. It has shareholders. And there are no reserves, right? Because they say, okay, so based on what's happening, we're going to change the interest rate in the country, and that's going to affect money, and that's going to affect lending, that's going to affect all these other things. So it's kind of this exterior body that's affecting monetary policy in our country. And the Federal Reserve is actually owned by member banks, right? It's not owned by the U.S. government. So J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, they all own a part of these banks, because the act was actually created in Jekyll Island, if you guys get a chance to read this book, by a bunch of bankers that went away for the weekend and put everything together and said to President Wilson, hey, dude, this is how we should do it. And it's owned by the member banks. So that's why they're kind of able to do all this like fancy dancing, spend your money, waste your money, do whatever the hell they want, because the Federal Reserve were kind of save their butts. And it really takes away our sovereignty of what happens with our money, what happens with our interest rates, what happens with our economy, because this body has so much control. So in my opinion, 1913 is the year that absolutely changed America forever. And if we want to do something about it, we have to handle these three things. So how would we do it? Well, the first two you can do by a constitutional amendment, because a lot of people said, well, should we open a constitutional convention? And I think that's a really bad idea. I know there are people I've talked to that are in that movement. I think opening a constitutional convention is a really bad idea, because then it opens everything in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, for debate. And that's how they get rid of things like the Second Amendment. And that's how they get rid of things like the First Amendment. And I don't want to open that can of worms. It's dangerous to me. But you cannot repeal an amendment to the Constitution. The only way you can remove an amendment to the Constitution is by a new amendment. And then it has to then be ratified by 36 states in order to do so. I think it's maybe 38 now, because that's based on that wasn't based on 50 states at that point in time. But anyway, I think it's a 2/3 majority is basically what it comes down to. 2/3 majority have to ratify that amendment. You don't have to have a constitutional convention for that. So you would have the no income tax amendment, beautiful thing, and the Let's Let Our State Legislatures Have Representation Act, because that's important. The Federal Reserve is a little bit more clunky, because it's kind of so ingrained in our system. So it kind of starts with an audit of finding what's there. And that's the big thing Ron Paul has talked about. Audit the Fed and find out what's there. And from there, we're going to have to do a game plan and see like what kind of moves we're going to have to make. Because really what's happened is since the Federal Reserve, kind of this global banking cabal in some ways, if you want to say that, has really taken over and made countries prisoners. So that's going to be a much more sticky one to do. But the other two are just constitutional amendments, which if you get a two-thirds majority, we can do something about that. So in my opinion, that's when America ceased to be a republic. That's what we can do about it. And that's how the easy way we can get back to being the republic we are. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Make sure you subscribe below. Hit the notification bell if you want to get the show notes for this episode and everything mentioned in this episode. It's over at jeremyryanslate.com. And this episode number is 1103. So jeremyryanslate.com/1103 will get you there. Thank you so much. Have an amazing weekend, and I will catch you next week.